Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Richard Spires, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining us today from IBM is George Kruiser. Richard, given your efforts around infrastructure modernization, would you elaborate on your data center consolidation efforts? What are the benefits of pursuing data center consolidation, and what are some of the key challenges?
Sure, Michael. I think that the benefits are manifold. Obviously, we talk a lot today about going green, and with the proliferation of data centers, DHS and our baseline inventory, we've actually located 41 data centers within DHS. Okay, just as an example of that. So right there, it says we should be looking to consolidate it from a power and energy saving standpoint, let alone all the other benefits that are more IT related, if you will, such as our ability to foster more efficiencies in how we run our operation on the IT side, the cost savings, clearly, the security benefits that come with this, because we can get to one security architecture much more easily by having these all these systems consolidated at a much smaller number of data centers. Those are the benefits that that we certainly see by doing this. And that's one of the reasons, too, having done it at DHS, when they asked me to help at the federal level with this, I thought, sure, I mean, I can draw upon the lessons learned that we have in order to help hopefully other agencies and departments as they look at data center consolidation. And to that point, you asked about challenges, right? And it isn't easy, right? Because it is kind of human nature for people to want to control their own environment, right? And for people to get more comfortable with the notion that, they at one point they decided to build a data center and they put all their servers in it and they have all their systems running on it, and we come by as the department level and say, we really want to shut that down and move all of that, probably maybe not even move the hardware, but just move the applications into a new environment. We're going to virtualize the servers so you can't actually go know where your application's running, on which server it is at any given time, those kinds of things. It's uncomfortable, right? And you got to build a trust that we know what we're doing, that we can deliver, that you're going to get hopefully not just the same level service, but you're going to get improved service out of this. And that takes a while. So again, I will give credit to my predecessors at DHS that have really, over the last 4 years, have driven this. And I believe we're at that tipping point where we've moved enough into these two enterprise data centers that we've stood up. We've had enough success that we're past that point of, well, I just don't think you guys can do it. They know now we can deliver. Doesn't mean that it's still easy, right? There's lots of things to work through. There's still people that don't want to give up their servers, so to speak. But I believe we've reached that tipping point. But as other agencies embark on this, they're going to have to go through that same type of, if you will, adoption curve. And hopefully we can help organizations accelerate that adoption curve, because I think it is so important for the federal government to get its arms around this. I think there's huge potentials, as I mentioned, in cost efficiencies, but also in energy efficiencies, and then in some of these other more intangible things, like fostering more efficiencies on how we share information and being in a more secure IT posture than we are today through this data center consolidation initiative.
Well, there's a lot of talk around things called virtualization or cloud computing. Are you at DHS using either or both of these concepts in practice to make a more efficient provision of services?
Yes, we are. I alluded to earlier this idea of a private cloud, and that's been our main focus on these two data centers, is to set up a virtualized environment that we can then provide a base set of services to the components in order to provide their end user capability. So in some instances, we're moving legacy applications in kind of as they exist. But in others, we're bringing in applications. I mean, email is a great example. We're bringing it in as a service offering now so that they don't have to worry about running an email system anymore. And we still have each component running their own email system. We'll run it as a virtualized service essentially for them, okay? And so you have that level of cloud offering. And then under that we do then virtualize like the servers and the like so that you can get the most efficiencies out of that actual hardware. So we're doing that as well. I would also want to point out, Michael, that we're looking at what does it make sense for DHS to buy from commercial service providers and their cloud offerings. And so we're trying to be smart about this. We're not just taking this view that, oh, it's got to be in our data centers. Now, let's also be frank. A lot of the information we have, the data we have, is very sensitive and in some cases even classified data. You know, obviously, we have to be very, very careful about the security aspects of that. So I don't think we're going to launch into putting highly sensitive data out into a public cloud kind of offering. But we are really looking hard. Are there applications that make sense for us to go to commercial-based cloud offerings and at least use that as a way to ensure that if we decide to keep it in-house in our, quote, private cloud offering through our data centers, that we're cost competitive, right? I mean, we don't want to be paying twice as much to do it inside as we could do it if we provided it or we went to an outside service offering. It needs to be cost competitive, right? Assuming that the security is there on the outside offering, okay? So hopefully that gives you some sense of how we're looking at private versus public kind of cloud offerings.
Terrorist attacks, national disasters, large-scale criminal incidents all too often serve as case studies to reveal our nation's information sharing capabilities and weaknesses. Would you elaborate on your efforts to enhance information sharing across the extended DHS community? And in addition to that, to what extent do you use and support the National Information Exchange Model?
Sure, George. You know, this is, you know, obviously a very important set of questions that you've just asked and issues you've brought up. From the perspective of what I'm trying to drive, I alluded to earlier the importance of governance, right, and the Information Sharing Governance Board internal to DHS to really foster more collaboration and the policies that we should have in place for information sharing, if you will, within DHS. But in reality, that board also goes well beyond DHS. And we are working very closely with, for instance, the PM for the information sharing environment out of the White House. It's now Shamendra Paul, who's taken the job recently. We have a very good working relationship with him, looking at how we can be part of that ecosystem for information sharing. At all levels of classification, you know, sensitive data and you know, obviously classified data as well, but be part of that ecosystem and be the right kind of partner, right, in sharing the right kind of information, but also having to work through the privacy issues and the civil liberties issues that you have to address to do this right. So we're trying to build, if you will, those communities and strengthen those communities to be able to further that information sharing. And we're making some good inroads in that. We just inked a MOU recently with the Terrorism Screening Center to get more of their information to us on a near real-time basis. And this was information we were only getting updated every 24 hours. Well, 24 hours in this world is now a long time, right? A lot of things can happen. And to now get that information on essentially a real-time basis, we believe closes a major threat vector to us. So that's one great example, a real success story that we've just had. But that doesn't mean we're done by any means, right? There's many other things we do need to do. And it's both back into that community of federal partners like FBI and other parts of justice and even the intelligence community. But it's also to those partners on the other side, the state and local organizations, law enforcement organizations. I'm sure you've heard of fusion centers that have been set up. And we play a very key role in providing a lot of data to those fusion centers at the local law enforcement level in order for them to more effectively have information so they can carry out their mission more effectively in the support of the homeland. So that's just one example. Now, from a technical perspective, one of the things that we've been a huge proponent of and in fact are the executive agent for right now is this National Information Exchange Model. The executive program management of that resides within my organization right now. And I am one of the members that sits on the Executive Council for NIEM, as we call it, National Information Exchange Model. And what is it? It's really an XML-based set of protocols that, if you will, define how you're going to share information. And it's domain-specific, meaning that there's a domain for information about people that we use. I mentioned screening earlier. Okay, so we use NIEM to share information amongst systems within DHS. Okay, we use NIEM to share information about people as of, again, with the right protections with other organizations as appropriate. But now, HHS is going to adopt NIEM for sharing health care information. Okay, and there's a domain in NIEM around sharing maritime information. So we've taken this concept of defining ways in which, I mean, you share information and what each of these data elements mean and how they're structured in an XML schema, and we're extending that. And the beauty of that is you build to that NIEM standard and then you can immediately exchange rather than having to do one-off information, if you will, negotiation for each system. Okay, so it's a force multiplier for the government, if you will, in these various areas. And I really should give Justice Department as well as DHS credit, who were really the founders of NIEM, okay, and have driven this forward over the last 4+ years. And now it's really picking up momentum. And we've got, there's our examples of NIEM being used by all 50 states now. So that gives you some examples. Some foreign governments are now using NIEM. So this is a great example of really a bottoms-up thing that happened. This was not driven top-down to start. But now with, you know, and I mentioned Shimendra Paul, the PM of the Information Sharing Environment. He was really one of the founders of NIEM and has been a huge proponent. Of course, you can imagine in his new role, he's really pushing it out there. OMB, in their guidance around the FY12 budget submission, talks about NIEM and challenges organizations. How are you going to be using NIEM in the future? So it really is something that now is being used on a government-wide basis, even though it started out really focused on law enforcement for justice and Department of Homeland Security.
What does the future hold for information technology at DHS? We will ask Richard Spires, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.